Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm James Shakeshaft.
And I'm Alistair Beckett-King.
And what we've got for you this time is the 50th episode, which we celebrated with a very special live stream.
A live stream is like a podcast, but it happens in the present, which by now is the past.
Yes, this is a recording of a live stream, so this is just a podcast which is slightly more shambolic than normal. So if it sounds like we keep referring to the fact that we're doing a live stream, it's because we were doing a live stream.
Yeah, get on board.
Work it out, Grandad.
I'm quite nervous.
Yeah, I've had fizzy arms all afternoon, which is my sort of tell for I've got a gig. Because I haven't had a gig since probably about almost a year.
Have you got 30 people watching?
I've seen 39.
What's going on there? I was saying we'd be looking at Edinburgh preview numbers, but we're looking at nice Edinburgh preview numbers.
Oh, Wilson Deluxe is in.
We've got someone from Chester the Street.
Hey, that's the guy, Chester the Street guy.
Philip Squidman.
Oh, Philip Squidman. Who's Philip Squidman?
I don't know.
I hope they can't hear us.
Pretty certain they can't hear. Shall I play the music and we'll actually do it?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yes.
Okay. Hello.
Hiya.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm good, Alistair. How are you?
I'm all right. This is a bit weird, isn't it? In my fake library, in your actual shed. Boxes and a fan I can see there and some WD-40.
Yeah, there's some old tiles.
Oh, nice. Windows Sabara, always thought you were joking about recording in a shed. No, it's a real shed.
No, it's a real shed with a real zombie baby. And I realised the other night I was sitting out when it was nice weather and I heard something trudging through the undergrowth on the other side of the wall near where the little gravestone is.
Listeners to the podcast will know that that is one of the most frightening places near where you live.
Yeah.
And it is known to be spooky.
It's about 2 metres that way.
The magic of live streaming is that you can literally point in the direction of the thing you're talking about.
Yes.
Through a wall.
This is the future.
Yeah. Whoa, Wilson Deluxe has brought up the MUIs with absolutely no MUI warning.
Please don't.
The last thing we want is a MUI incident coming down not just on us, but on everybody in the chat stream.
Yeah.
Thank you. Wilson says they will be more careful.
Thanks, Wilson.
Thank you. I'm glad we got the Wilson Deluxe rather than the basic model.
Yes.
Because it is better. You do appreciate the...
I don't want to be a naysayer, but I'm not sure there's that much of a difference apart from in price. Hello, the people. How are you, the people? It's very nice to have you here. It's exciting.
I think we should refer to them as, in this being a folklore podcast, they're folk, really.
That is, yeah.
The lore folk, welcome.
Hiya, folks. That works, actually.
Yeah, and also it makes you sound like a cool vicar.
Yes. Not for the first time.
Like a drama teacher. Hi, folks.
A drama teacher that moonlights as a vicar?
Possibly. Hey, maybe we should do some improvised scenes around New Testament stories. Maybe we could do that, you know?
How'd you turn a pulpit round and sit on it backwards, though? I'm recognising names of people that have emailed us. We've got a man from Chester the Street.
I saw Chester the Street in the chat.
Yes.
A.K.A. Chester the Street, A.K.A. Chester Lee Street.
Chester Lee Street.
One of the finest streets in the northeast of England.
Have you ever been to the town of Chester?
Yes, I've also been to Chester.
Is it like the street, but bigger?
It's like Wilson Deluxe. As Wilson Deluxe is to Wilson, so Chester is to... I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. Has Chester got a shop called Amy's Winehouse?
Oh.
Presumably that's a Chester Le Street establishment, but I've got to put that with the Jimmel Mixit Concrete Mixing Company in terms of business names that you later come to regret.
Oh, yeah. Wowzers. There's a lot of people in the region of Chester the Street.
That explains the unusual stats we get on the podcast, where like half the listeners are from America and the other half of them are specifically from Chester the Street. Now it makes sense.
Oh, I feel bad we're not doing a northeastern tale today. Shall I unveil the tale?
Yeah.
Today, we're going to be talking about The Rollright Stones.
Nice name.
It's a great name.
Got a little picture of them here.
That's the main circle, the King's Men, which is just under 100 stones in a circle, about the same size as Stonehenge.
Really?
And then about a quarter mile east of that is four stones called the Whispering Knights.
That is a good name.
And then just across the road in the other direction is a single standing stone called the King's Stone. And around there's also various other things like long barrows and old, like, Iron Age farm and a Saxon burial ground over there.
Do you think that they planned to have three different stones around the place? Or do you reckon they planned to have them all in one place and lost commitment to the bit? Because after you've done 100 stones, you're like, maybe these ones are just here.
Should we just leave these?
These can be just some knights, and that one over there can just be, because it's big.
Make a thing of it. We'll give them all different names so it's like a thing.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Well, they've actually dated them, by which I mean presumably carbon dated rather than, you know, taking them for a drink, taking them down to the bistro, to Amy's Wine House, or... It's not because it would be chippy. It would be, you would probably take someone to Taste of the Country or Annie's Country Pantry if you were doing it in the 80s.
Annie's Country Pantry?
Yeah, that was the place to go.
It sounds like something that if you say it too many times fast becomes rude.
It's got some spice to it, which is ironic because it served the blandest food. but they are actually from different times. The Whispering Knights are the oldest. They're reckoned to be from between 3,800 and 3,500 BC.
3,000 BC?
3,800 BC.
I wasn't appreciating how old they were.
That is, according to the Hebrew calendar, that's from before Adam and Eve. The Hebrew calendar starts in 3,760 BC, or they probably don't call it BC, though, I imagine. And that's the year before Adam and Eve.
Wow. So the year before Adam and Eve...
They were potentially already 200 years there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is old.
That is old. Older than time. The main circle is from about 2500 BC.
Yeah.
Which is, the Pyramid of Giza was finished in 2560 BC.
All right, now, you impressed me with the last one, but let's not try and put it up against the Pyramids of Giza, James. I mean, look, I'm going to bring the picture back up. This is a mid-17th century drawing of it. They're good! They're not the pyramids. They haven't even thought of putting one stone on top of another stone.
It was either they couldn't be bothered or they made a design choice.
Oh, it was a design choice to just leave them sticking in the ground.
Yes.
And not all in the same place.
Yes. Like,
all right.
Like how I put my dirty socks on the floor rather than in the wash bin. It's a design choice. By the way, 2500 BC, that's older than beekeeping.
That's older than the domestication of the bee.
Yeah.
Is that what... Because up until that point, they were rogue. They were the equivalent of...
Wild bees.
As wolves are to dogs.
Yes.
So old bees were to current bees. Nine times the size.
They howl.
They chase you down, spray honey in your eyes.
And you get werebees. If you were stung by a bee whenever you tasted honey, I don't know.
Of course, that's Geordie for our bees. doesn't really work. There's too many Geordies in the chat. I'm not going to get away with that.
Oof. The Kingstone is the youngest. He's from 1500-ish BC, which is the time of Tutankhamun.
Some people have pointed out that the stones are quite a lot bigger than the horses in this picture.
Maybe that's because horses were smaller in them days.
Well, you don't realise is that's a child sitting on a dog in the foreground.
So, the Royal White Stones, the legend. That is the boring bit about how old they actually are. Tried to spice it up with bees, as I do most things in my life.
Yeah, I really appreciated the bees, thank you.
But the story that's told for how these stones came to be there is, I'm going to get my special book, one of my favourites, Folklore of the Cotswolds by Catherine M. Briggs. So, way back when, back in the past, there was an army with a leader, a king, who in some reports is a giant. And he wanted to take over the whole of England. And he got to around the area of Little Rollright. And he was going over a hill. And then a witch came in front of him. And she said, seven long strides thou shalt take. And if Long Compton thou canst see, King of England thou shalt be. And he was like, brilliant. And he, in every single report, it says that he shouted this. He shouted, stick, stock, stone. As King of England, I shall be known. And he took seven long strides. And as he took a seventh stride, a hill rose up out of the ground and blocked his view of Long Compton.
That's really good. Just like Macbeth, but with special effects.
Yeah. And then the witch said, as Long Compton thou canst not see, King of England thou shalt not be. Rise up, stick, and stand still, stone, for King of England thou shall be none. Thou and thy men whorestones shall be, and I myself an elden tree.
Oh, nice.
The king turned into stone, his circle of men just behind him turned into stone, and then a quarter of a mile down the way, some knights who were whispering and conspiring against the king.
Oh, I see.
Were also turned into stone.
How did anybody find out that they were conspiring if they turned to stone, if everybody there turned to stone and the only person who didn't turn to stone became a tree?
Well, because they don't actually always remain stone.
You've genuinely surprised me there. I didn't see that coming.
Four things that turn into stone as some sort of curse, they seem to get quite a lot of time off. Apparently, the Whispering Knights go down to Little Rollwright Spinney either on holy days or every single night at midnight to drink from the river,
oh,
the Spinney.
The Spinney is a river.
Spinney's a word for like stream thing.
Right.
And at midnight every day, the king's men dance in the air.
Yeah?
Yeah. And, oh, what happened once, a load of people surrounded the king's stone and someone went over to the tree that was the witch, the elder tree, and cut it with a knife and it bled blood.
Ooh. Oh, I like a good tree that bleeds blood.
And the king's headstone moved. Wait, what's that?
That's a great story.
More stuff. The Whispering Knights, apparently, they will tell you the future if you listen very carefully.
Yeah.
Women would go and listen to them and they'd whisper the name of their future husbands. Oh.
And they'd be like, the Brexit referendum will be leave.
Yes. Put some money on it.
But then it turns out it's just a UKIPper standing behind the stone because it is Chipping Norton. Let's be realistic.
Oh, there.
It's not a very Remain area.
It was because it was Cameron's place.
Oh, sorry,
so,
yeah.
Who, by the way, does a lot of people say, when I say Chipping Norton, they say David Cameron lives in Chipping Norton. He does not live in Chipping Norton. I want to put this to bed now. He lives in Dean, which is where the tip is. Dean Tip, which mysteriously shut down just after he became Prime Minister. Coincidence? But upside is, the tip now that people have to go to is a pit, and it's run by the Dix family, D-I-X, and it's called Dix Pit.
So the tip is a pit.
And it's run by the family of Dix.
Run by the family Dix.
Mm.
Which is our awful version of the family Ness.
The late night version.
The horrible, horrible kids show.
Those aren't bagpipes, mate.
You want a thistle whistle. I don't know what that means.
I'm guessing that's to call attention and hopefully get rescued.
Oh, Elspeth.
Leave her out of one podcast. We normally get to cut this. The Kingstone is meant to be lucky. If you take a little chip of it, it's seen as good luck, or it's a fertility charm.
Nice.
And fairies dance around it.
Fine, yeah.
Just on the regs. The Whispering Knights, a farmer once wanted to make a bridge over that spinney, so he decided to take one of the stones from the Whispering Knights.
Oh, they're not going to like that. Based on what I know about them, they're going to be really cuttingly sarcastic about that in a sort of low-key kind of way.
Definitely out of earshot.
Oh, yeah, try and make a bridge out of me. Fantastic.
See what that farmer's doing now. And so it took him, apparently it took four horses to drag this stone down the hill to the spinney, and two people died.
What?
I don't know how. Just says two people died during it.
That's incredible. I mean, that's like, how many? That's like, it's not the Channel Tunnel.
How many people died trying to cross this stream? So, yeah, four horses, two deaths, and he put the stone over the river, and then every day he would come back to it and the stone would be just like overturned and no longer useful as a bridge, and he'd drag it back into place. Hopefully no one died during that. And then every morning come back out of place again. And so he just gave up, and it took one horse to pull it up into position and no one died.
That's interesting, because you'd think it would be harder to pull a stone uphill.
Exactly.
Than downhill.
Exactly.
I'm no Carl Sagan.
No.
I'm no Bill Nye the Science Guy.
What?
But I'm not. I'm not even wearing a bow tie.
I'm sorry, folk. You're witnessing the end of this podcast. I've been lied to.
A couple of points from the chat. Slug Me Up, Jeffrey, is saying, once we tried to go to the Roll Right Stones, but Dad didn't realise how far it was, so we all got back out of the car, and that was that. Which is quite a tale. Someone's asking, maybe the reason it took so long to pull down the hill is he was using one of the really small horses from the picture.
Oh, yes, very good
Just
point.
Just the little pug yeah. horses with a doll on
yeah.
them.
Yeah, that means that it might have been two children dying, so that's actually quite sad now. It's actually got quite sad yeah. now. It was just two normal people dying, two full-size people.
That's the thing with our podcast, though. You never know. It could be some light-hearted whimsy, could be some pun-based banter. It could be the death of a child, the cruel and untimely death of a child. I think that's why people listen.
Yeah.
Just to see, is a kid going to die in this one?
Yeah. You notice I've been deliberately vague about how many stones there are
yeah.
in the King's Men.
Yeah.
That's because you can't count them.
What?
Well, you can count them, but if you can't get the same number three times in a row, there's around 70-odd.
There's around 70.
The official number is 73, but the legend says that you can't count them three times. If you manage to count them three times in a row and get the same number, then you either get all your wishes come true, or something quite bad will happen, like the witch will come back and get you.
The range of outcomes there is a little too wide for me to bank on that.
Yeah, but, you know, it's exciting.
Thrilling. Certainly the most fun you can have counting approximately 73 stones, yeah.
It's the most fun you can have in Chippenotton or the Chippenotton area, definitely. I sort of think it's a bit like a medieval or prehistoric version of Deal or No Deal.
Wilson Deluxe has said it's like Roll Right Roulette.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, and once a baker tried, he wanted to win Deal or No Deal, and he baked a load of bread and he put a loaf on each stone so that he thought that, you know, he'd get all the way round and he'd see which one. Because the thing is, you don't know which ones you've counted because some are sort of sticking out the ground. You can't quite tell if that's the same stone. And
as we know from Hansel and Gretel, the only reasonable way to count something is using the medium of bread.
Yeah, yeah. Bread is sort of like...
It's literally the only way you could have done it.
Yeah, it's...
Baked up to 80 loaves of bread.
It's the past's blockchain. And, when he got back round, some of the bread had been magicked away and he got in his car and rode off at top speed.
Magicked away. A couple of Shetland ponies chowing down on a bap. Fighting over a baguette. Yeah.
Those are the legends. Those are the stories of... Oh, and recently, someone that I read in the Chippy News, the Chipping Norton News, wonderful publication.
Oh, yeah.
That, I say recently, this was genuinely probably about 10 or 15 years ago. Vandals had daubed paint on the stones and people going, why had they done it? And it's clearly they were trying to count it.
Trying to count it, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the legends.
That's wonderful. Thank you for that story, James.
No worries. I'm sure I've left loads out.
So I thought I would tell you some stone stories from the very opposite end of the British Isles and find out a few things about stones in Appin and Argyll. Are you up for that?
Oh, yeah, talk
little,
to me.
Little tiny little pebbles?
Yeah, definitely.
Just very, very small stones.
Pebbles, yeah. Some gravel.
Argyll is where my mum is from, Appin Argyll. And there aren't many standing stones there, but what there are is loads of... I think they're called Glacial Erratics, which I really like because it sounds like a pretentious album title, like Glacial Erratic. You know when you're in a field and there's just a big round stone in the middle of nowhere and everything else is just hill and grass? How did it get there? It's just been dropped by a glacier. And allegedly there is one which rings if you hit it. And I spent a good portion of my childhood searching around trying to find that one and never did.
Who told you that this stone...
My mum told me
okay.
that she'd heard it ringing. So that's right. that's a reliable source.
Yeah, I think it's like when I'd try and get mine to find something that I know where it is and it's not where they tend to look for things. Just so I can have a little sit down.
In the farm where my mum grew up, there was a big erratic. And my granddad had painted a picture of a sheep onto it. It's sort of a life-size portrait of a sheep. And what I like about that is a little bit of the Scottish sense of humour. Because the field that it was in was full of sheep. There's plenty of sheep around, but one of them was a drawing of a sheep. And I don't know if it's ever happened, but I visualise him accosting English tourists as they walk through, just going like, well, you see that sheep? No, you don't.
It's no real.
There's a sheep over there. No, it's not. You reckon? Okay. Okay. Yeah, like a wily coyote.
Go touch it. Go get a stroke.
Oh, he's flat. You can't see him from that side, but here he is. What's going on?
It's like that story you hear about a thing that happened on a lad's holiday where one of those, you know, you get those spherical bollards sometimes in like beach places. And they're made out of cement, but someone's painted it to look like a football, and then a drunken lad wanders up and breaks his foot.
I was imagining a bigger one and thinking it was a space hopper.
Oh, that's a lot more fun. Trying to hop awful. On a cement space hopper.
But just kicking like a medicine ball, that would be awful. Those kind of stones, they appear in the only novel that is associated with the area, which is Robert Louis Stevenson's Kidnapped.
I don't think you pronounced the exclamation mark.
Sorry, yeah, it's got an exclamation mark. It's Kidnapped! Bit more Broadway. Is that all right with you? Mm-hmm. A bit more West
That's
End?
That's better, thank you.
So in Robert Louis Stevenson's Kidnapped, there's a bit where they're being chased by the fuzz, and they have to hide on top of a big rock, which has a hollow in the middle of it, so they hide in the big rock while all the soldiers search around, and they stay there for, I think, a whole day, and they nearly die because of the blazing sun, making it the least realistic episode in that fairly accurate historical novel. But the last thing I found about stones in that area is very small white stones are believed to be associated with death. White pebbles have been found on graves. So when fishermen were getting ballast, big sacks of ballast for their ships, they would separate out all of the white stones. They would never take a white stone with them.
That sounds laborious.
I know. It's like the M&Ms for a band.
Ozzy Osbourne wouldn't go on stage unless he had a brandy glass full of brown M&Ms.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the fishermen were just pretentious rockers insisting on not having white stones.
Didn't one of those fishermen bite a bat's head off?
That was good luck, though, at that time.
That's nice.
Just a little pebble dash there of Scottish stones.
Yeah. Shall we scores?
Yes, let's do some scores. What categories have you got for me?
Let's get it out of the way. Naming.
I like roll right.
Yeah.
But do they roll right? Because if anything, the story told us that moving them was quite difficult.
They rolled wrong because they wouldn't roll down a hill, but yeah.
So it's a cool name, but quite misleading in some ways.
It is. I always feel that the town of Little Rollright sounds like a passive-aggressive waiter fat-shaming you. Little Rollright.
The King's Men. Everything sounds like a pub where you're from. The Whispering Knights.
Yes, that's a good pub name.
Which sounds like a Mills and Boone novel. They whispered of love and betrayal. The Kingstone, a witch who turned into a tree, who remains nameless.
Oh, no, some people think it's a Mother Shipton.
Oh, yeah?
Because...
You said it's a member of the Mother Shipton franchise.
Yeah, one of the Mothers Shipton. the famous one is from Leeds. There's a famous witch called Mother Shipton from Leeds. And there was a similarly named one who was actually from Shipton. And I think they both predicted the world would end in 1881.
Oh, idiots.
And there was a great big storm that year, and a lot of people died, so it might have been a bit scary.
So there's names. There's the, as Lachnitz has said, the ASMR Knights. They're quite cool. I like them. That is a better name than the Whispering Knights. I think it's a two.
Yeah.
I think it's a two out of five.
Yeah, there's nothing. There is nothing. Even the one name that I found was the same name as a more famous person. Okay, then. So, second up, Supernatural.
Supernatural. Well, I didn't appreciate the noise that you made. What have we got? Transmogrification, metamorphosis. What's the word for turning into stone? Ossification. Fairly supernatural, I think. Turning to stone is a classic.
Sure.
I don't think we've had many stories where people turn to stone.
Yeah.
And in this case, up to 79 people have turned to stone.
Yeah. I think there's four of them, one of them, 78, I think, would be the...
Circa 78,
yes.
Stone turnings. That knocks Medusa into a cocked hat. That's fantastic.
Big time.
That's very supernatural. You got a witch. I didn't even remember the terraforming.
No, yes. Yep. A hill out of nowhere.
I beg your pardon. Snarky Bartfast, living up to the snark in the name, has pointed out that ossification is turning to bone and is suggesting that petrification is the word I wanted.
Isn't it turning into Ozzy Osbourne? like them sailors. There's the fairies that dance around a kingstone. You've got the stones just dancing in the air.
Yeah.
They rise up into the air and dance.
coming to life, inconveniencing a bridge builder.
Yes, a witch that turns into a tree for no real reason.
Yeah, turning into a tree. Imagine ending a zinger with, and I'll turn into a tree, and then turning into a tree. Yeah. What a mic drop.
The king's men and the king may come back to life, will come back to life, and take over the country.
Oh.
Sometime.
Yeah?
Don't know when.
Right. I mean, bearing in mind that the people who said this thought the world was going to end 100 years ago.
Yeah.
There's really a lot of vagueness around that happening.
Yeah.
Still, it's 5 out of 5.
Yes.
There's nothing I can't argue.
It's unarguably very supernatural.
It is an extremely supernatural story. Arthurian, Stapokador points out, it is that they will come back to life in the hour of England's greatest need, just like King Arthur.
Oh, you put that in. They just will come back to life and take over the country at some point.
They might come back and be like, nah.
Whoa, let's go back to stone a bit.
We'll give it a minute.
Yeah. Well, that's perhaps feeding into my next category, which is passive aggression.
Passive aggression. Break that down for me.
So there's quite a lot of passive aggression in there in this story. You've got, if this idea that they will come back to life at some point, but they do come back to life every night and go, yeah, not for us.
It's a snub, certainly.
It's a little bit judgy. You've got the witch's weird sort of turning herself into a tree out of spite seems to be quite passively aggressive. And I bet, although it isn't featured in the rhyme, I bet when the hill rose up out the ground, she'd be like, oh, didn't you see the hill there? I thought you should probably have taken that into account before you agreed to my deal. And the Whispering Knights,
yep,
the most passive aggressive of all the megaliths.
I suppose it's 4 points, James, if that makes you happy for passive aggression. If you feel like that's okay, then I guess I'm going to give you 4 points.
Yeah,
if that,
I'll take that.
I'm happy with that. If that's the way you want it to be,
fine.
It's 4 points.
Fine.
Good.
That is one per Whispering Knight, and what could be more passive aggressive than a stone that kills two people?
That's the other album. Passive aggressive. Glacial erratic.
Oh yeah. They're double albums as well from the days of CDs.
Oh, I loved that. Same price, 2 CDs.
I know. I was all about the value for money, which is why I bought Wu-Tang Forever rather than 36 Chambers.
If I understand correctly, Wu-Tang Forever lasts until the end of time.
Yes, it's 36 Chambers is the better album. So my final category is unknowability.
Okay,
I don't think that's a word.
What is unknown in this story?
How many stones are there? Don't know.
Just get me some bread. I'll count them. It's easy.
Also, that's a lot of loaves.
And bakers can't be trusted because bakers think...
Even for a baker.
A dozen is 13. He's the last person who should have been counting is a baker. You want to get someone in a job where numbers mean something.
Like an accountant.
Yes. Get a bean counter out there with his beans.
And put one bean on top of the thing.
Yeah. No, count them using something that's not edible. That's my advice to the people. Something that isn't edible and won't roll off. That's unknowable. The purpose of the stones built in prehistoric times, that is genuinely pretty mysterious.
What were they whispering about? We'll never know.
I don't even know how we know that they were whispering. So that is...
What was the witch's problem?
I don't know, yeah.
What was her horse in that race?
Very small, presumably.
That small dog.
Yeah. More of a greyhounds for her, I think. All right, in the category of unknowability, I'm going to write your score on this piece of paper. And I'm never going to show you it, James. The score for unknowability will remain a secret forever. You have been listening to Lawmen with me, Alistair Beckett King.
And me, James Shakeshaft.
If you enjoyed the podcast, you can buy us a coffee. That's ko-fi.com/LOREMEN. And James, you've done a little mini investigation, haven't you?
I have, yes.
Into what, James?
The Snuffling Beast of Lidstone, of course. People have been... person has been banging on at me about what the Snuffling Beast is. So I really got to the bottom of it and I interviewed the witnesses. Check it out, it's after the music finishes. Stay tuned or simply don't press stop. It's the 50th episode of Lorman. It's the 50th episode, and I decided to put the beast to bed. Finally get to the bottom of the snuffling beast of Lidston. I managed to get in contact with the Harding brothers, and I kind of knew things were going to be difficult from the outset. One, two, three. Looks really fun on video because it's so out of sync, but actually we all did that at the same time somehow.
Oh, really? Jim was looked well out of sync.
That's lag.
Me and you were in sync. Interesting.
I felt I was late to clap.
I think you were actually a little bit late as well, because normally you two should have been at the same time. Anyway, hello, the Hardings.
Hello.
Welcome to Lawmen. Would you like to introduce yourselves? Jim, do you want to go first?
My name is Jim Harding, and I'm originally from the Lidstone area.
My name is Dan Harding, and I too originated in Lidstone, the general area.
You're brothers?
We're brothers.
So that all checks mm-hmm. out, really. You two experienced the creature that we all call the Snuffling Beast of Lidstone.
The Snuffling Beast, yeah.
We believe so. It was on a back road, a famous back road between Lidstone and the Chippy to Charlbury Road.
So let's paint a picture. What time of day was this?
All night, night time.
It was night time.
10 or 11 p.m.
Yeah, at least, yeah. A little bit later.
Have you got an idea of what year it was? I presume it was early 2000s, but I...
I think I was still at school, probably, so it might have been 97 or 8.
Oh, I think it was later than that. I think it was 2001, 2002.
Old enough to know better. Memories diverging, even at this early stage.
So, do you remember what time of the year was it? Was it winter, summer?
I'm going for late autumn. But I got no idea.
It must have been fairly warm because we were standing outside the car. We'd chosen to get out.
I think there was a reason for that.
Before we get into the reason why you... where had you been before? Had you been...
Ooh, probably down Chippy.
Could have been down the Chequers or something. The person we haven't mentioned so far was giving us a lift home, probably.
Ian was driving that night. I checked in with him and he confirms most of Jim's side of the story. It was the early 2000s, it was probably winter time, and they had been at the pub. And then the euphemisms began.
I think it was agreed we should get some fresh air.
Oh, yeah.
And we decided to stop.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe partake in something just to kind of take the edge off the night.
Right.
And we thought that would be a good spot. It's slightly secluded. Yeah. You can definitely get off the road.
You're keeping yourself to yourself. You're not bothering anyone.
We thought it was safe.
Mm-hmm.
That was key.
What are we talking? Dogging?
Well, you could call it a Bane stop.
Okay. We're talking Sweet Mary Jane. We're talking Indeed. Doobie. Mm-hmm. We're talking, the Devil's Curly Kale. Wacky Tobacco. Zoot. Spliff Sticks.
Or just...
Weed. We're talking about... You stopped off to have a little toke on some weed.
A Bobby Bane.
No.
And so what happened? So you got out the car, the paraphernalia was paraphernailed, and how long was it before the incident?
I'm hazy. Hazy on that detail, I don't know.
Unsurprisingly.
5 or 7 minutes.
Yeah, mid-Bane.
What do you hear or see? Or smell?
I think very little was seen. I'm not sure if I'm the only one who actually heard it, but I certainly heard a rustling, some distinct movement. What felt like was being caused by quite a large creature.
Yeah, there's definitely a sensation of movement.
And snuffling.
And snuffling. What? How do you mean snuffling? Can you demonstrate that? Can you repeat that?
You know, the direction of sound, you could hear it was coming from a ways off, but coming closer, certainly coming closer. That was the, the moment of panic.
It was almost pitch black as well. So you couldn't really see much, but you could just feel, sense, movement, a kind of, like a change in the...
atmosphere.
Yeah, the atmosphere, what was happening. I remember Dan shrieking... maybe jumping into Ian's arms.
Like in a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Kind of clutching at him in terror, as sort of maybe trying to climb up him or get behind him, fearing his own life anyway.
Like a racist image in a Tom and Jerry cartoon.
Something like that, yeah.
What noise did you hear, Jim?
Like a little, a gargled feminine shriek.
Can you...
Or from the beast, do you mean?
Either.
Well...
Oh, that's not so bad.
Something like that.
Something like that. And that was that the first you heard, or had you heard the snuffling as well?
I was kind of aware of some snuffling, but I was like, oh, what's that?
I think maybe I was close. I think I was closest to the snuffling, possibly. I remember feeling quite exposed.
Right.
And I remember snuffling came from the right, so from the field coming towards the car.
Right. And what happened? Did the... You never saw anything?
No.
No, I don't.
Did the snuffling sort of fade away? Was that the end of it?
I seem to remember after the commotion I caused, then you kind of turn back to see, well, what is it? And there's nothing there then.
Right.
And then, you know, all kinds of things play in your mind. Did you imagine it? Did we scare it off?
I don't think so.
I mean, had we been absolutely silent and walked slowly towards it, we probably would have, we might be famous or dead.
So that's the story. But I needed to speak to an expert, someone who knew about alien big cats, ABCs. That guy was a comedian friend of mine, Tom Holmes.
Just Tom Holmes, just regular Tom Holmes, really, nowadays.
Just standard man Tom Holmes. I've called you up about this because you're my go-to guy for ABCs.
Yeah, anytime there's a big cat sighting, I find I get a lot of tweets and stuff, and people all, like relatives, will text me, and I get emails from people going, "You seen this?" yeah. And nowadays, I mean, there's quite a lot, very regular.
Do you think it's increased under lockdown? Do you think they might have got cockier?
Matt, do you know what? There has been quite a few. There's been quite a few in the last June, I think, there was quite a lot.
The weather. Probably the weather.
Could be weather. Although, and maybe people are just getting bored as well. They're thinking, maybe it is that kind of lockdown cabin fever thing. I've just seen a big cat. I don't know. Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, one in the Cotswolds and one in Surrey.
Whoa.
Within the same week.
You're saying they've got, one's got an access to helicopters?
I would say it's almost certain that they're probably using some kind of, flying device.
In 2003, I was stopped by the police and asked if I'd seen a puma in town in Chipping Norton.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's interesting, yeah. So as a young
because
lad...
Because near Chipping Norton is the winter... Or it's the old winter quarters for the Chipperfield Circus.
Okay.
So it used to be where they keep their animals out of season.
Right, okay.
And now it's a thing called Amazing Animals, and you can, like... book experiences there. They definitely have lions, tigers. They say they've got a liger.
Really? Oh, wow, yeah. Well, maybe they do. If they've got lions and tigers, mate, all you need is a candle and some romantic music and you got yourself a liger shortly after.
Well, the specifics of this case that the Hardings saw was the thing that they really focused in on was the snuffling.
Yeah.
It was a snuffling beast. Are there many reports of the noises that they make?
Yeah, I remember seeing a documentary years and years ago. I haven't tried to look it up on YouTube, but there was a lot of talk. There was this one woman who was convinced they were in a garden, and she lived in Dorset or somewhere like that, and she used to hear snuffling a lot, and that was what she said as well, snuffling. And I think her neighbours going, it's badgers. But then she was convinced she saw them, but she was like, I just know they are. I know they're big cats. It wasn't the best documentary ever. There was a heavily dramatized piece where there was this bloke who used to go out on a quad bike with a six shooter, and he was like, I'm gonna cut. And then they did this bit that where it was like a reconstruction, and it was one of the worst things I've ever seen. It was like a joke. But if you could find that somewhere, I can't remember what it was called. But it's the sort of thing I've been interested in for so long. I've seen so much stuff. It's just incredibly annoying that there's never anything that's quite cast iron enough, you know. But then, you know, if we were living in the, you know, if we cared about this in the 80s, they literally caught cats then. So what's to say they're not there now? But yeah, the snuffling certainly is, I do remember her saying, oh, he's snuffling in my cabbage patch or something like that.
Oh, really?
Which isn't a euphemism or anything like that.
Oh, thanks very much, Tom. Thank you for your expertise.
No worries at all, mate. No worries at all.
And we'd like to have you on for a proper episode.
Yeah, that would be lovely. That would be lovely. Yeah, I've written down some a Native American proverb as well.
Oh.
I think I got it from a fridge magnet.
Will you share it with us?
No, it's something, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along the lines of, if you see a wolf in the wild, that wolf has seen you 100 times. Meaning, you know, different animal, obviously, different animal, but same premise, that, you know, that wolf has been watching you for a long time and you've only just caught it the once. You know, they move around very, very quietly. They don't want to be seen. And as a result, you know, you don't know that they're right there next to you.
So there you have it. We've seen the beast once. It's seen us countless times. Will it ever let us see it again? Will it just snuffle on?